USA Network podcast, where we in the youth department kind of gather and tell our stories, some of our triumphs and our failures. And today we actually are going to talk about our failures. Let's get to it right away. Who's failed the worst here? Today we have Megan and Dave Widoff and Abraham Guevara and me, Jim Sparks, hanging out in our plush studios. Well, it's just a workroom, basically. But we have fun walls that we could write on. Anywho, have any of us ever failed in any of our programs?
100% yes.
Yes, definitely.
What, Dave, tell us your failure.
My failure story is a lack of awareness. So I was on a summer discipleship program. This was back in Central Territory, and we our leadership group was looking after a bunch of teens in this discipleship program, and we were at the training school. And this one evening, we were all playing a game outside, and one of the young people, one of the teens, had some health issue, like an asthma attack or something, I kind of forget. And we actually had to call an ambulance for it. It was kind of that serious. And we gathered everybody else back up in one of the rooms, and they... other leaders took the kid to the hospital. He was fine in the end, but I was with all the kids back in the room, and they wanted to go to the prayer room and pray for this kid, and which is great, a great sentiment. So we got in the prayer room, and we were all lifting the fellow up in prayer. I sort of felt like, you know, we had prayed for him. It was good. I didn't want it to get out of hand. I thought, you know, this guy, he probably just doesn't want the attention. Like, he's in the hospital. No one wants that kind of attention, so... I should probably just wrap it up. So I closed the whole thing in prayer. Coming to find out the next morning, when everyone's poking fun at me, that apparently everyone else's perspective on that night in the prayer room was different. They all thought that it was a great movement of the Holy Spirit, that we were coming together around our brother in Christ, that, you know, people were feeling something spiritually in that moment, a connection, and I totally killed the moment.
You're a show killer.
Yes. The big joke was that I started my prayer, "Dear Boring God," and then just ended everything.
was the kid all right in the end?
Yeah. Again, the kid was totally fine. There was no problem.
So it wasn't a complete failure.
No, but what it taught me, what I really, the sort of failure lesson, I guess, was like people can have very different perspectives on what's going on. It's like the movie Vantage Point.
Never heard of it.
I heard of it, Dave.
You've heard of it? Yeah, I mean...
The movies that Dave has heard of and the movies that I have heard of never, ever
that
coincide.
That Venn diagram doesn't cover?
Nope.
Point being, they had a different perspective, and not just, you know, an opinion. They had a different understanding of how the Holy Spirit was working that evening, and I missed it. And to me, that's a failure. As a leader, you know, you should try to be more sensitive to those things, but even with the best intentions, you can sort of make mistakes like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a big one. It's not, you know, in the end, it's not super consequential, but in other scenarios, that might have been worse.
Yeah, I've shut a few meetings down early myself.
Yeah, but it always feels a little weird afterwards. Oh, man.
Well, it only feels weird when someone says something.
Right.
If they talk behind your back, then you're fine.
Then you don't know.
Right. But, Abraham, you got one?
Yeah, I got a few.
A few.
I got a few. I can't tell you the countless like events and stuff like that we've put together and like people don't show up. I don't know if you can call that a failure, a learning experience.
Yeah.
In the words of Conor McGregor, I don't lose, I learn.
He's that's a great reference, by the way.
It's a good one, right? I had one. I guess this is like a worship leading kind of thing. I was leading worship. It was at an event. I'm not going to say which one or where, but it was a youth event of some kind. And I had a band, had it put together, and it was a rough weekend with just musically. And then the Sunday, and this is kind of like Dave's a little bit, cause your story kind of reminded me of this. The Sunday, there was just nothing but problems with the sound, just sound problems, band problems. Everything was just rough. The whole set was rough. And then I finally, just like in the last song, I was just trying to go to a slow song and find an excuse to like go a cappella. I was just trying to find a reason to just have the crowd sing so that we didn't have to deal with the sound anymore.
Yeah.
And so we just cut it all away, and everybody just, band stayed quiet, and then everybody just kind of sang, and it was a nice little moment. But it was just, like, in my mind, this is like, this is just an epic, epic fail, horrible, like, you know, and I felt really bad about it. And honestly, it wasn't until like many years later, like 5 or 6 years later, it's kind of a happy ending, but I talked to a guy at and he told me that he was at that, he remembers me from leading at that event, and he goes, yeah, that's where I accepted Christ, and then I felt the call for ministry there at that event. But to me, that was like, I always, before that point, before that meeting that guy, I always told, use this story as an example of like when I failed in the thing, like musically. But ever since that guy, this is now a story about how your perspective can be different when it comes to those, to those sort of failures. Now, I learned a lot in a sense. When I viewed it as a failure, I learned, yeah, I need to be more prepared, and learned a lot about sound, you know, like what can help fix those issues. But yeah, that was a rough one, man. That's just dredging up all the anxieties coming back and talking about it.
I know, that is the hard part. You start thinking about some of that stuff, and you're like, ah, oh, that was rough. It's a rough feeling. Megan?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So at WYI, a couple years ago, we were doing a men's worship night and a women's worship night. And we were at Redwood Glen, Camp Redwood Glen, and the women, we were in the campfire pit, and I thought it would just be so cool to have this, like, Pinterest-inspired s'mores table.
Oh, yes. I do remember this now.
And so there's this table on the stage. It's got all this food on it. We set it up. It looks all cool and campy and flannel-y and stuff. And we had
a glampy.
That's a thing, though.
It is a thing.
But yeah, so we're doing the service, and it's going really well. And Lieutenant Joy Groenlier was our speaker, and she goes up to speak, and she, as always, is just a great message. She's a gifted speaker, giving just a really powerful message. People are responding to it, and then there was some movement on the stage. We didn't know at first what it was, but it turns out there was like a family of mice living in the speaker, an old speaker on the stage, and they smelled the food, basically. They smelled the chocolate and all the sugar, basically, and they kept dashing across the stage, and people started just like screaming and freaking out. And props to Joy, because Joy just powered through that sermon and she killed it. But I was so embarrassed because literally the whole thing could have been prevented had I just asked camp about having food in that area. So it was kind of embarrassing. But in the end, you know, there is a lesson to be learned. I feel like had I just asked and like known the space that I was working with and just kind of been more aware of, like, you know, I go to that camp fairly often, but I'm not that familiar with it. So had I just asked Ed like one question, could have had a really like meaningful moment and not had all that distraction. So that was my big, more recent fail.
There's always a critter story at camp that you run into. I remember when I was a kid at camp, it was junior soloist night, so everyone's nervous and sweating, and I'm sitting in the crowd because I wouldn't do a solo if my life depended on it. But watching a mouse run up in the eaves up at camp, and I mean, these kids are stressing up there, and everyone's like, every time they saw one, those darn things, they're of the devil, I think. I have a lot of failures. I'm very good at failing. It's a gift of mine. But one that, yeah, has maybe multiple levels of failing, happened in, it was in the late 90s. I'm going to say it like that because it makes it sound really old and maybe less like giving me a little more grace. So we did, I love to get my ideas from really old ideas. I like to take really old ideas and then make them new. And this was early in my process of trying to do that. And so I didn't think everything through always, but this was at camp. This is at Camp Mount Craig's. And I was the assistant program director. So I was in charge of, you know, the evening programs. And we had an Indian night.
All our faces are cringing right now.
Yeah, it was an Indian night, and probably could have stopped right there. But instead of us paying tribute to the Chumash Indian tribe that resided in those mountains, we decided to create our own Indian tribe names that which people could create, and cabins created. And it was really, really rough. And you know, looking back, probably pretty insensitive. No, it very much was insensitive. I had no idea. I really had no clue. It was totally naive. And so they all gathered at the campfire, and they did their Indian chant song of some sort. And I know that there's pictures still around that haunt me to this day of that. But that wasn't necessarily the biggest failure out of that, because what we did is I arranged, because at camp, I never understood why we kept doing those programs in the same spot every night when you have a camp. So just go and do it somewhere else. And so this one, they were to walk the fire road, which is about, I don't know, it's like a mile maybe all the way around. And so all the campers would go through, and there would be like four stops along the fire road in which we gave this devotion. And I thought through that part. I didn't understand that bees lived in the ground. And so I'm marching in the front, painted disrespectfully, and beating a drum, and oh man, it's awkward to even say that part of it. But all of a sudden, I hear a bunch of screaming and chaos happening right behind me, and I turn around, and kids are diving on the ground. They're like jumping into bushes and running for all their might and screaming bees. 32 campers got stung by bees. 32. And it was a complete nightmare. I mean, the kids paint on their face was all like melting down because they were crying, and it looked like a complete disaster. And so we ended up going back to the campfire pit, and then the rest of the staff took care of the rest of the campfire while we were taking our credit cards out and swiping bee stings out of their that was a big failure, to say the least. And to be honest, I probably didn't learn a whole lot about it until later on, because I had plenty of excuses of why it failed. I had a bee. The bees. I can't control the bees. But looking back, all of the inappropriate things that happened leading up to it, and the planning and the insensitivity, I can learn now. Drums, paint, fake Native American names. Holy smokes. It's just another time that I've been very thankful to not have gone through my massive failure steps in programming under social media. No Facebook, none of that existed, and no, like the pictures that would have been taken would have been probably from the DYS, and probably a little bit blurry, so they would never get posted anyways. Boy, am I lucky. Can you imagine? It might be national news now, but anyway, we're talking about failure, and we've all kind of shared a little bit about what we learned, and I was kind of drawn to an article by the Harvard Business Review about don't be a hypocrite about failure, and this is written by Justin Brady, and we'll post a link in the description for you to read it. But it's interesting, and Megan was with me on this event, but he's talking about organizing a learning event, And there was a lot of people who went to the first one, and it was exciting. And so they did a bigger one, and then hardly anyone came. And then his having to respond to that. And I couldn't help but think, Megan, remember the Entrepreneur Day? I arranged. I'm not going to throw you into that. But you came. But we had Entrepreneur Day down at the Croc Center, and I was really excited for it. I got a food truck. I got all this stuff. And how many people were there? 30 tops? Grand total, 30 people. And we had food for, what, 200?
Yeah.
There was asada for everybody and for their family members and stuff. And I could remember the food truck guy was like, what do you want to do with this? You bought it all. And I was like, I don't know, just give it to homeless people around the way. And I left being really, really like, I just can't believe what happened. And it's the same feelings that this guy had. And then he talks about how to kind of respond when that happens. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But he writes, if you can't admit failure, you cannot connect with your team. What is that? How does that resonate with you? If you can't admit failure, you cannot connect with your team. When you're leading, obviously. Go ahead, Abraham.
Is this on? I think it's because you're leading a team full of failures.
Yeah.
Like we've all failed. And a lot of times I think leaders, they're viewed as infallible. There's like, you're trying to create this like atmosphere of infallibility to your people, or at least that's kind of the vibe that sometimes happens.
Yeah.
So when you tell them, hey, listen, these are my failures, this is where all my shortcomings are, you're instantly relatable to them. And it gives them a little bit of hope, I think, because you're like, man, if he failed, you know, and he's still in a position or whatever, he's moved forward and progressed, then that means that despite all my failures, I can do the same thing. I think that's kind of where it goes.
Yeah, Abraham, I think that fits really well with the idea of trust. If you're leading a group of people and you can't admit your failures, they will see through that. And they will see essentially that they can't really fully trust you because you're not portraying a true representation of yourself.
Hmm.
You're kind of putting out this facade that's perfect and doesn't have any problems. That doesn't seem like a firm foundation for leadership, really.
Sure, not to mention that you could be on the receiving end of the blame for that person. They if they felt like they failed, it could have been something that you may or may not have done, and take on the blame on that. Yeah. Megan, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Dave touched on it, but just trust, honestly. It's just not real life if somebody's never messing up, you know?
Yeah. Right, and generally the failure is not a giant mistake. It's usually the series of things that are going wrong, and you have to kind of navigate that. And there's, you could be honest and say, hey, this isn't going well. And how do we remedy that? And you work with the team, or you could try to let your arrogance take over and say, this is going fine. There's nothing to look at.
That's part of that trust. So when you do make a mistake that is obvious and there's no way it could be hidden, if you've shown that you can handle failure as a leader, then your team will trust you when a larger failure shows up.
Yep.
They'll know, you know, you're not going to pan it off on them. They'll know that you can roll with it. You can improvise. You can find some way to remedy the situation. But again, if you put it out there that you never make any mistakes, the people that follow you are probably going to be afraid when you do make a mistake that's obvious.
Sure. And you just get a bunch of cheerleaders ultimately when you're transparent, and then they see it and they'll be able to say, hey, Dave, this isn't going right, and starting to catch it early. And you could have a very honest, candid conversation that is no harm, no foul, and maybe be able to prevent ultimate failure.
Yeah, probably catch stuff earlier before it gets out of hand.
Yeah.
There was a quote in there that I really liked. It said, leaders only look weak when they act like they know it all.
Yeah.
That's so true.
I know. Yeah. I think of a couple of things that we've all done together in here where I was thinking of the game show that we did a few years ago, and it just was not going well. And
Is it like something about lyrics or something?
No, that was
No.
Good one. Was that the good one or not? I don't know. We've done so many game shows. Was that the not good one?
That was another.
There was one of them. It just wasn't going well, and we could see it unraveling, and then we were trying to figure out ways to cut it short, knowing that if you do cut it short, there's extra work on the back end. You have to program some other things. But that's, I think, a good example of when we all recognized as a team, and it was no one even batted an eye. It was like, this is just not going well. Admit where you went wrong. And this is actually a practice that we have in our department when we debrief events. When we debrief events, we don't spend time talking about food, I don't know, location, a bunch of things that may change the next time. We talk about actual work habits and programming things. And part of all of that is that we have to kind of share with the group of something that we've could have done better ourselves. And so that brings a level of transparency. And I found that through doing that over the years now is that when something is not going right, it's much easier to kind of talk about that because we're willing to talk about it ourselves. And so it's a good practice to have. The second thing is, if you can't admit failure, you won't learn from it. What does that mean to you?
I think one of my favorite things to hear about is, I like listening to a lot of comedians, but I like hearing about their bombing.
Yeah.
I like hearing about their, like, when's the worst time you bombed, or when's the worst time. I can think about, like, the times I've bombed, quote unquote bombed, on, like, when it comes to teaching or preaching. I've had some rough times. But I noticed that, like, the only way you get good at anything is if you try it, if you keep trying it, and not just like practicing, not just kind of like sitting in the laboratory thinking of things, but you actually have to go out and try things. You have to put the money into it. You have to spend the money basically, in order to get good at something. You have to spend the time, you have to make the effort and actually put on the show, put on the performance, put on the program. You have to try it. It's the only way you're going to get good at it.
Yeah.
And you can go to class, you can do all the lectures about it, but the only way you're going to get good at it is if you try it and fail at it, and fail at it a lot, like, just, you know, and just keep going. Yeah.
I think also if you're failing, but you're not, what was the question? If you're not admitting to it?
Yeah. If you can't admit failure, you won't learn from it.
Yeah. I think it kind of goes back to a humility issue, a sort of an ego and a pride issue at the end of the day. If you're not admitting to these things, you're not even recognizing that they're an issue, because you're just so stuck on yourself, I guess. I don't know. And if you can just take a step back and look at that, I think that's how you're going to learn from it.
I would guess, you know, if you can't admit failure, you're not going to learn from it. To me, that just, I would imagine if someone can't admit their failure, they're probably not learning from anything, really. If you can't admit your failure, that's very similar to not admitting your insufficiencies. And it's from our insufficiencies and our failures that we see room for growth in our lives. If you think you always have it all together and you're not making mistakes, chances are you're not improving yourself. You're not learning some new skill. You're not learning some new ability because you think you got it all together.
Yeah.
And yeah, Megan, that's very similar to that sort of humility versus pride issue, you know?
Yeah. And I think sometimes when failure props up like this is, you know, over the years I've done a lot of teaching and like classroom style teaching, whether it be at youth events or at the training school or whatever. And every once in a while I don't prepare. And I'm like, oh, I've done this 100 times and I don't prepare. And I get chewed up in it. And I get I'm stumbling all over the place and I forget. And for me, those are kind of wake-up calls of just saying, hey, you need to be prepared. You need to go in and you need to be ready. And I would say it took me about 4 or 5 times of doing that before I realized, like, I didn't admit to those the first 4 or 5 times. I was blaming the size of the room or the audience or any of that. But if I'm honest, it was me not preparing. And so those are those are my humble speed bumps that just show up and kind of kick me in the backside a little bit. And when those pop up, I know that I have not done the proper work for it.
I just thought I could share another story on this, actually. When I first started in this job, I was at... Hello? Testing?
Oh, sorry. Can you start all over?
Yeah. This just reminded me of when I first started working here. I was invited by the training school to come, I think, sub in for a class. And I think it was actually when I was co-teaching an exegesis class. And I went over there with basically my idea of what exegesis should be, what the class should be like, and what the cadets should be learning. And, you know, I had their syllabus, and I knew what they were planning to do, what they were planning to cover. But I had my ideas, and I think the first two class periods, I just went for it, and I got a lot of pushback from it. Hmm. It was frustrating, and it was surprising, and it wasn't what I wanted, because, again, I wanted to teach what I thought was important. But it was very clear that the class was designed differently. It had different purposes, and which were good and important and frankly better. And it took a bit of learning to kind of change my style to address the needs and the realities of the cadets that were there. And it turned up in the class review midway through, as you saw a lot of some of these complaints. And then I think it was in the final review, you saw these little comments that said, man, the first few weeks of Dave was crazy. The class wasn't, you know, working, but we talked to him and things worked out in the end. And it was one of my, you know, favorite classes or something. I don't know if that was actually it, but
probably was, Dave.
it took a little bit of time working through my expectations and desires for something, failing in that, and then actually listening to people to respond to it. And if I might not have done that. I might have just tried to plow through with my way of doing the class, but it took a moment to stop and learn from it to make a difference.
I think what's key is that you are willing to learn from it. I think a lot of people just try to ignore it or kind of brush it under the rug, you know, rather than try to take the time to learn from it. Because it is, I mean, it's embarrassing. It's humiliating for sure. You know, you really have to, like, humble yourself and stuff. But obviously people from the class, they recognize that you had that flexibility and you were willing to make those changes.
I think the admitting failure part goes with humility, and I think it also goes with maturity. I think that's a big sign, because I can't stop thinking about my daughter and my kids, how it's like when we're playing a game or when there's something going on and you start losing, starts changing the rules, and the goalpost kind of starts moving around because, you know, she doesn't want to admit failure. She doesn't want to admit loss. And I think a lot of times in my own mind, my own life, there's times when I've looked at something that was clearly a failure, and I try to justify it, like you were saying. Try to, like, defend it and move the standard, you know. And I think that's another important part about why you should have goals and why you should have sort of, like, here are the objectives we're trying to hit. And if you don't have that, you can't measure your success or failure. But, yeah, I think looking in the mirror and saying, yeah, I failed I think it's a part of growth and maturity. And I think that was a part of, just speaking personally, that's where I feel like I've grown the most, is when I've admitted fault and failure. And yeah.
If you can't admit failure, you won't tolerate it from others. What does that mean to you guys?
Grace.
Grace?
I think that's going from the spiritual angle, going from, like, where Jesus says, the one who has been forgiven much loves much. And I think that, this idea of seeing failure in your own life gives you grace towards people who also fail. It gives you grace towards, like, young people who are up and coming and trying to figure out their way. Seeing them fall, seeing them falter, I think that gives you a lot of grace towards people when you can look at your own self and your own mistakes.
Yeah. It's also, you know, we kind of talked about it a little bit before, but when you're a team and you're recognizing that stuff, it really isn't that big of a deal. You know, we collectively agree, hey, this isn't working out, and you just work it out. But if you can't see that yourself, you're not going to be able to see it in others, and you're going to just destroy them. And there's, I mean, I often wanted to do job interviews in the setting of a an event, because then you get to see the real people and all that. And if the real people on your team are able to be honest and take a look at themselves and have a pretty good self-awareness, then it's easier to tolerate others in that situation, because you know that you're going to be the next, you could be the next to make a bad decision, and all you want is what grace. That's it.
It really seems to me too. I mean, if you interpret failure as weakness, and then you don't admit it in yourself, of course, because you don't want to show weakness, it makes sense then you wouldn't tolerate weakness in other people. But that's an interpretation. It's how you're viewing it. If you're seeing failure, again, as a learning process, just like you said, Jim, as a group, you're going to learn together. You're not going to hide your failures then, because, again, it's not a weakness. It's an opportunity to improve, to change, to become better. It's sort of how you're viewing it, really.
Yeah, definitely. Let's look at the last one. If you can't admit failure, you'll find your own failures tough to handle. If you can't admit failure, you'll find your own future failures tough to handle. Why is this? I think because it's still stuck in your brain. You know, I look back at the things that we and myself have not done right. I've forgotten a lot of those. It wasn't until we started talking about failures in the office that I started remembering, like, those aren't in my brain. The ones that I probably have not still come to grips with and I'm still adamant that I was right, those are fresh. Those are still in my head and, you know, willing to probably still do battle on those. I could probably resolve those at some point and clear the cache. But we tend to forget about them, right? And or we use, like, the ones that we do catch. I was failing miserably in one of my jobs that I had, and my boss said that you're failing miserably. He was pretty direct, and he was correct. And I was relieved, strangely. I wanted, and your natural instinct is to fight back, right? Because you're trying to save your job. But the reality was, I was pretty bad at it. I knew I was bad at it. I was relieved. He pointed it out, and I vowed that no one would ever say that again to me. But I kind of forget about that every once in a while. Like, it's never, I have no ill feelings towards him, and I deserved it. And I look back, and when I get lazy here in the office, I look back at that moment and be like, I can't go back down that road. But I wouldn't be able to do that unless I was able to come to grips with it. And I was lucky in that sense that I did. Otherwise, I think you get stuck in those habits, and you can't break out of them. And you constantly feel like you're on the defense for everything. You're always having to defend your stuff. But when failure is an option, and an option that's really not that big of a deal in the end, then it's kind of easier to do it. And we still have to address it. We still have to remedy it. That still has to take place, but you could get over it pretty quick.
It seems to me like people, they view maybe success or failure as sort of like scores in a sports game, right? And well, maybe not a sports game, but they think like perfection
sports
is
game, Dave. Sports game.
I know. I honestly stopped in my tracks because, like, you were using a sports analogy, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's gonna nail it.
No, I'm not gonna nail
no.
it.
No. Go to esports. Go ahead.
It's sort of like having a. I'm gonna leave the sports thing because I have no idea how to apply that.
In Legend of Zelda. Go ahead.
Dota.
Well, I was thinking if there's a video game analogy for this now.
Just go for it.
All right. Well, if you can't admit failure, it's like thinking of yourself always at 100%. And it would be tough to handle future failure then, because you're going to feel like this has never happened before. It's going to feel like a surprise to you.
Yeah.
It's going to feel like, wait, no, I was the best, and now something's gone wrong, and it's going to crash your world. If you're somehow aware of your failures, do you see how that has no relation to sports now?
No. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So
I was suspect in the first place.
You should be. If you're aware of your failures, if you're admitting your past ones, when new ones come along, again, it's not going to be a surprise. It's going to be, okay, I've dealt with this before. I can handle this. You know, we can roll with it.
Yeah.
I think from like a programming standpoint too, I think back to like service core orientation. So my first service core orientation, I was like really overwhelmed. I didn't know what I was doing and it just was crazy. And I feel like I messed up on a lot of stuff. And I feel like each year I have to kind of take like a personal inventory and be like, what could I have done better? And I actually keep a Word document for each year and I make notes for the next year because I from year to year sometimes I forget, but and then I actually, as I'm planning the next year's orientation, I go back to that document and I actually look at it and I'm like, okay, what could I have done better and how can I do that better for this this next time, because I feel like it helps not just me improve, but it also helps kind of take the focus off myself in a sense and really think about what's important about achieving this week, like what is this week all about, and not it helps me feel like I'm not, myself is not getting in the way of achieving those things.
Yeah, I would say in programming, and just anything, I don't let I've learned to not let the failures just kind of sit there. I tend to go back to those to see if we could get it right a second time. I think sometimes we give up on it and we're just like, no, that was a terrible idea, and it's out. I have a failure folder on my computer of different ideas that I had. And I still think some of them are good ideas. They just were not executed properly, and that's entirely my fault. I still think they're good ideas, and one day I'll find the right execution and the right avenue for some of those. And that's happened a few times. The speed testimony idea, that was largely a failure. In fact, we backed out of that idea a couple times because I just didn't think it was going to be right. But we kind of stayed with it, and then it came out, and ended up being a very successful little program idea. But I would just caution that we not just lose sight of it and just say, "I'll forget it," because it may have been that the mice just that could have been an incredible evening. It probably was an incredible evening, but even more so without the mice, to kind of go back to that and then take the next steps to prevent it. And it would just be a really, really good evening rather than it goes in the junk file and we'll never deal with it again. And then if you fail twice on it, then you think it's not the best idea in the world. Abraham.
I think when I hear that, I feel like there's a big confidence, sort of like confidence issue going on there. I feel like when you can't admit failure, you lose confidence in future endeavors. You lose confidence in what's coming ahead, and I think you become afraid to try things. I think you can also, if you don't admit failure, I think you can also be vulnerable to jealousy. I think when you see somebody who does something successful and they start moving on, like in a certain program and a certain position, I think you could easily be open to jealousy if you're not honest with yourself about failure. Mm. I think you start to almost idolize position, you know.
Yeah.
You start to almost idolize those things and start thinking that the value, what gives you value, is position and all that stuff. And I think that if you're honest with yourself about weaknesses and who you are, when somebody comes along and does something better, you are happy and you say, hey, there's someone else I can learn from right there. I can learn from that. And yeah, I know that they also fail too.
Yeah.
But what can I learn from that individual? What can I, how can I grow from coming around people who do things better than me, you know? But yeah, I don't know why that kind of stuck out to me in that angle.
Yeah. I think something that Dave said too, kind of coming back to that, is that you're not alone. Everybody has failed around you, and you have to recognize that you're not alone. And when you are the support person to someone who's failing, you have to recognize that all those feelings are real and that they aren't alone, and it's not just on them. It's a collective effort. It's so from the supportive side, we've talked about some leadership side, but the supportive side is we also need to extend grace and like, it's okay. It's okay. I got you. And, I'll do whatever it takes to kind of iron this out. And, I think that's what makes a team very efficient. But again, that it all comes down to just honesty and being very real and being able to be real in real time as well, because it's in the heat of battle, when something is not going right, you could easily lose your mind and start blaming other things. But it's crucial that you just recognize, saying, hey man, that's my fault. I scheduled that wrong. I scheduled the buses to pick up at this time and I shouldn't have. And then everybody else, I very rarely, well, I can't even think of it, a time where someone is completely admitted to failure up front and everyone's like, oh, come on. I can't believe, why on earth would you have done that? You know, and come crashing down. It's usually like, it's okay. It's okay. We can take care of this.
Well, I feel like in our team setting in the youth department, if something's going terribly wrong, we can sense it and we all just jump right in. We don't even focus on like who messed up or anything like that. And I think part of that is because we do spend time after each event and we have to say maybe where we could have improved or what we messed up on. It's kind of created this level of vulnerability to where it's created trust. And so if something's going wrong, we just jump right in I think it's great, honestly.
I think to get to that point, it really takes building that culture, though. You have to create a culture where people are comfortable and familiar enough to admit those things. And then that sort of just powers itself.
Yeah.
It's like a positive feedback loop, right? As people continue to admit their failures and work together as a group, it builds more trust, and it just reinforces this ability to keep that culture alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to do. It, like you said, takes a lot of trust and a lot of team building, not just grab your hands and tie a knot, but team building and working with each other, recognizing each other's mannerisms when things are not right, being able to recognize when they're not right, asking the right questions, and doing what you can to help in which way you can. And I think it is a strength of ours in our department. I do think there's times too where we're still working on it, and we're still learning, and we're human, and we make mistakes. We make big mistakes, and sometimes we make little mistakes that we think are nothing that end up in big mistakes, but that is part of the learning process. And failure is an option. It's something that we should learn from and recognize right away and talk through. I think it's important to talk through those things, not to try to get empathy, but to try to learn from that and learn as a team. So if you have a failure story that you want to share with us, share it with us on social media when this eventually gets posted on the social media. That's it for podcast episode number 2. And Megan, any updates on Redwoods?
Yes, I totally forgot to talk about Redwoods in episode 1. So
I did not forget about it this time.
I'm super excited to talk about it in episode 2. So Redwoods, if you're not familiar with it, it's basically just the idea of finding community in your core. We have small groups, and they're interest-based, and we have just over 50 right now across the territory, which is really exciting. And this past January, we just launched a newsletter that goes out every single month. And in that newsletter, there is new content, and there's a video and then actual like devotional content for each week. And if you are a Redwood group leader, we invite you to use it. If not, then that's okay too. You can study whatever you want to study, but we're really excited. We really tried to brainstorm topics that we thought would be relevant to young adults specifically. And we just want to just encourage you to check that out. If you maybe aren't a Redwood group leader, but you want access to their newsletter, just to check it out, just send us a message on our social media. We check it all the time, and we'll add you as a subscriber so you can check it out.
I love the Redwoods program. I think it's so much fun. It's, well, it's hard not to be fun because you're doing something that you enjoy,
right.
And you get to meet new people. So get in a Redwood group or start a Redwood group. Next, the last thing we're going to talk about is WII has big changes this year. We are going 18 and up this year. And the theme for this year is life. Dave, tell us about life.
Sure thing. We're going to take a look at life in terms of, I think, some important questions that are very universal to all people. When it comes to understanding life in the context of the Christian walk with God, a lot of people, they want to know, first off, you know, does God even understand them? Does he know them, who they are, and the struggles and the realities of life that they go through? They want to know, you know, why did God even make us to begin with? What's our purpose here? If he understands us, great, but what is our purpose? What's the higher reason for living? I think beyond that, we also want to know, does God even act for us? You know, he might have made us, he might understand us, but does he even act for us? Is he still involved in our lives? And finally, having maybe some kind of answer for those things, we want to know, how do we live now in the day-to-day? So in WII this year, we're going to look at these questions of life and how some concepts like the incarnation, the Sabbath, the resurrection, and the kingdom of God, how they address these questions and show us, you know, the blessing of life that God has really given to us.
Awesome. And we're going to have fun on top of that.
Oh,
well, I mean, that's fun too. Let's not get wrong with that.
It's going to be theological, of course.
It'll be theologically fun. it'll be great. That's happening in the end of July over August. That's it for now. And we appreciate it. And we'll be back episode 3 coming soon. Bye-bye now.